Prepare to qualify.
You have entered the Fandom Effect. A podcast with anime, video games, comics, movies, and unlimited ideas. Each week, a new guest will press start and discuss how they're making their dreams come true with your hosts, Mark the Bushido Geek Hilberg and Devin Dreamy Kong McVitie. It's time to enter the Fandom Effect. Please insert 25 cents to continue. You have one playthrough. Better make it count.
All right, everybody, welcome to another edition of the Fandom Effect podcast. As always, I am your Sherpa Fandom, your guide to finding those new things and new experiences to be passionate about, the Bushido Geek. Unfortunately, Devin did find the link this time. I managed to keep it out of his hands for a couple of episodes, so we got some really good episodes coming up. And then, unfortunately, Devin managed to get his hands on this one.
Well, like so I keep telling you, I'm your Alfred to your Batman, and it's going to be that way until the show completely.
I'm gonna pull a deceased, and I'm gonna eat you.
That's no bueno.
Because that, you know, which by the way is a very good comic book series, but it's super dark and gory.
Got it. Yeah. Well, you know, hopefully, there's a good side of everything, right? So I'll be the good Alfred that you don't eat and hate the taste of. Loose. But Mark, how you been?
Busy, you know, we've, busy, but yeah, as always, I mean, we're never really alone on this podcast, are we?
No. And I'm pretty excited that, we get to enjoy not only one, but two guests today.
Yeah. Related.
That never happens.
Whether or not they want that to be the case, it remains to be seen, but.
Well, I do have to say, I am excited to, welcome the Nelms brothers with us. How's it going, guys?
Good. Thanks for having us, guys.
So, for those who don't know, Nelms Brothers are known for a lot of different things, directing, producing, writing, and sometimes acting. I did see a few acting credits in there for both of you guys, and I was like, oh, man, look at these. So one of the biggest things that you guys are known for currently is your latest movie called Fat Man. So me and Mark got a chance to check that out. Very interested and we watched it and it was like totally not what you're expecting out of a Christmas movie. How about that? Like,
yeah, you know, we wanted to subvert some people's expectations, you know, maybe expand the Christmas genre a little bit.
Yeah, it's so I'll read the description off of what IMDb has, and you guys can tell me how accurate you feel this portrays the movie. So it says a rowdy, unorthodox Santa Claus is fighting to save his declining business. Meanwhile, Billy, a neglected and precocious 12-year-old, hires a hitman to kill Santa after receiving a lump of coal in his stocking.
So look, I mean, we're biased, so I think that's pretty accurate because we wrote it.
That sums it up. That's a clean run through it, for sure.
So let me ask you guys, how do you come up with an idea like this?
Man, I think it just honestly came from, you know, we had seen Santa Claus as a sociopath that comes down your chimney and hacks you up, you know? We'd seen him as Tim Allen, you know, wonderfully portrayed as Tim Allen, a little more family-friendly fare. And Ian and I were just like, well, is there room to give Santa Claus some swagger? You know what I'm saying? But like to like sort of strip away all the fluff and the bells and the, you know, and all that sort of like garish stuff and like make it very utilitarian. And like, what does that world look like if he actually had to exist here instead of some more fantastical elements? So we wanted to sort of blend in the fantastical Santa with a real world sort of like grounded everyman.
Yeah. And try to find some of those moments that, you know, that are in the myth, but like, what did that legend and that myth, where did it really come from? You know, like, where does he really live? Is it the North Pole? Like, you know, what are elves really like? What's his wife really like? We thought of some ideas that we thought would subvert people's expectations at times, but still kind of slide into the mold. And then there were times where we were just looking at, okay, well, what would the real use of that be, like with elves in their uniforms? And then even, you know, although you see them in their, like, you know, now when you commercialize them, they look, you know, they're wearing like little green uniforms and always have a smile on their face. And, you know, like what do they really look like, and why are they, like, you know, there are a lot of times that, like, what we put on them uniform wise, you know, was very sort of turn of the century, like, you know, early 1900s, you know, industrial revolution.
Exactly. That was some of our comps, was like looking at those, like, turn of the century factories.
But of course it's very, again, very utilitarian. Like we were trying to find like what would these guys be into, and what would they look like, and what would they do, and why would they be dressed like this? And, you know, like for say, I know one of the things
why would they have bells, right?
We're like, yeah. Oh,
they're around all these blind corners, kind of like, you know, and Ian and I do mountain biking. So we're like, when you're mountain biking, you put a bell on your bike so people can hear you coming. I'm like, oh, that's what the bells are for. So it was interesting to go in and sort of like come up with some of these rules, right? Like, it was fun to sit there and go, okay, well, if Santa Claus knows when you're sleeping, he knows if you've been bad and if he's been good, like, he's got a, you know, the entire populace of the world bombarding his mind at any time, like, he would go schizophrenic. So, like, oh, well, you know, we had to come up with rules for that. And, like, I don't know, it was a really fun challenge, to be honest.
I think that goes to a lot of credit into the depth, because I feel like a lot of times when you see those different takes, sometimes there's that missing attention to detail. And I feel like it, like you guys said, it does matter. Like, you know, those minor details about, like, you know, why do they have bells, or, you know, like, why, and how does Santa deal with it? You know, like, it's definitely interesting that you're taking it from like a, we want to dive into those approaches. So obviously, being brothers, how do you guys approach coming to decisions as like a team? Like, is it harder? Is it easier for you guys? Do you hate each other secretly? You know, I mean,
first of all, Ian's an amazing wrestler, so any idea he has is where we go, to be honest. I think we've been kind of blessed in that we get along, we enjoy working with each other, we have a really high regard and respect for one another. We sort of synthesized our tastes growing up in a rural part of California where there wasn't a lot of friends, so we were either forced to get along or be really lonely. And so we watched a lot of films and stuff like that, and our tastes just synced up, you know?
Now, are you being kind to him? Because I notice your arm's in a sling, and I'm feeling like that might have been Ian that did that to you.
Yeah.
A mountain biking accident.
I disagreed on a story idea, and I lost. So, you know, it's good.
As you're mountain biking, you're like, I don't know, Ian. I don't know if I agree with that idea. Oops, sorry. I didn't mean to push you down that trail.
There was a stick there in the woods. My bad. But I do want to ask, too, is like, so with you guys doing, after doing Fat Man, does this kind of like, now does this give you guys the idea like, okay, now we can start doing this with other holidays? Like, you know, a rabid bunny comes out of nowhere. You got Easter, right? You got a
frothing at the mouth. Yeah.
Yeah. I can't do a killer leprechaun, though, because that's already been done. So
that's been done. But it's, that's one way to do it. There's another way of where I think, you know, you stay in Christmas and have a little more fun there. For us, it's probably the way we would go with a sequel or a prequel. Because we wrote two short stories when we first came up with the idea, and one of them was like sort of an origin story, and one of them was more of what you saw, you know, not every detail, but it was the starting point of what that film ended up being. So we have a whole, you know, other prequel idea, and then, you know, after making this one, we have had plenty of time to think about where this one would go as well. So. So I mean, that's probably what we would do if we were moving forward in sort of a franchise way with this one. We would stay with the characters and stay with the idea and move, you know, show you how he started, and how he got the coat, and then show where he's going.
Yeah. And you've got the cast to do it. I mean, you guys have got some pretty big people in there. Obviously like Walton Goggins, Mel Gibson, a lot of other people. When you guys were getting your cast together, was there a particular, did you know in advance, like, oh, I'd love to have this person for this role? Or did you kind of have to see the person reading the lines to kind of get a feel for how they could portray the character?
A little bit of both.
When we first wrote it was 14 years ago when we first kind of went out with it. And our idea for the roles was Jack Nicholson and Johnny Depp. And then, you know, 14 years happens, Jack is semi-retired, and Johnny Depp has done Pirates and half a dozen other franchises, and, you know, may not be interested in taking something that's a little wild like that. But our idea of who we wanted in 14 years changed as well. And we didn't quite have anybody in our mind until about 2016, when we went to a screening for Hacksaw Ridge, and Mel was came out and did a personal presentation where he was talking about the film. And we just really saw the character in him right there. He was, it was 2016. He just finished the film, and he was exhausted. You could tell he was tired, but he still had that spark and that passion in his eyes. And he just had this, he was kneading his beard. He had this big, beautiful beard. And we were like, oh my God, like that's literally the character right there. And from then on, we were like, man, he would be make such an amazing Chris. And we were just really fortunate that, you know, when our agents reached out to his agents, they thought it was a cool idea to go to him. And then he read it and really enjoyed it. It was, yeah, man, we feel really blessed that he came on board, because he really was our number one guy for it.
Awesome.
Yeah. And then in regards to Walton, you know, we were meeting actors and had a lot of really amazing people that we sat down with and who would have done an amazing job in their own right. But when Walton was suggested to us, you know, it was kind of like that head slap moment, like, oh man, yeah, like he's amazing. Like, let's go sit down with him. And we sat down with him in a cafe, and it just became undeniable. He like stood up in the middle of the cafe, and it was not empty. You know, there were patrons there enjoying their espressos and such. And it started acting out scenes, and he was like, and I got this elf in front of me with it, and I got my rifle bear down. And then we're just like, holy smokes. Like, he was totally there, totally in the guy. And Ian and I just looked at each other, and we're like, yep, we got him. This is our skinny man, you know?
For sure.
That's one thing that you have to say about Walton. That's like playing like a character, like a hitman and stuff. He, you know, in other films he's been in as well, he plays that persona so well, because he's almost got like that bone chilling creeper aspect to him. And it's almost like, you know, he hasn't, but he gives you the feeling like he's killed somebody. Like he's done it. He knows what he's doing kind of situation. And you know, as for Mel's been in so many different movies throughout the years and provides such a great, you know, acting behind him that he's just like, it's phenomenal to watch him on screen. Now it is funny to me, because it's always like, it puts you in the back of your head that you say that you guys want to do a prequel and a sequel to it. And Mel could always bring Jim Caviezel on, and you guys have Jesus with him, right? So,
Bam, keep it up. You know?
So, when it comes to the process and stuff like that, I know that you were saying you guys wrote it a long time ago and started finally getting it into the production in the recent years and stuff. Was it hard to shoot this in a certain scene? Because I know a lot of it takes place in the wintertime. Was it hard to find that specific area to be able to shoot all of it? Or did you guys have to like stop and go at other times?
I mean, we took it up to Canada. So we shot it in Ottawa, which was, I mean, you know, really snowy, really cold. That's a pretty brutal winters up there. So we didn't have any trouble finding the snow. Thank goodness it found us.
It was plenty of snow. Yeah.
Yeah. We moved right into it. And it's funny, we got there, you know, a couple months before doing pre-production, and then the snow sort of came afterwards. So we got to experience Ottawa without snow for like a month and a half or two. And then it started coming in, and then we lived there all the way through, you know, one of the worst, not worst winters, but one of the most snowy, cold winters I've ever experienced, being from Central California. You know, about, you know, it doesn't get that low. It doesn't snow in California. So I remember we were doing the shootout, and that was one of the first things we shot. And it was, it got down to -36, and we were outside for 4 days straight. And, you know, one of the great things about that was, one, it was incredibly torturous to be outside, and we were outside for 12 to 14 hours a day shooting that sequence. But like Mel, who was in costume with fingerless gloves, we were like, hey man, you know, go into the warming tent, you know, you're done. After you shot about an hour, we were switching to Walton's side. We were like, okay man, you're good, you know, for this sequence right now. We'll see you in about an hour or two or whatever after we finish Walton. He was like, okay. We turn around 20 minutes later, and he's standing behind us, still standing there with a green tee, chatting with people, you know, in between setups. And we're just like, oh, Mel, hey, sorry. You know, like, you know, did you not hear us? Like you got a minute. You can hit the warming tent. And he's like, no, I'm not hitting the warming tent. I don't do warming tents. If you guys are out here in this. I'm out here with you. And he stayed out there with us for 4 days straight, whether he was shooting or not. And it was a real, you know, not just an act of solidarity, but like it really galvanized the crew and the other cast members. And there just wasn't any bitching. You know, it was more like, okay, well, shit. And it made it more fun and exciting because he's out there telling stories about Braveheart and Hacksaw Ridge and Apocalypto and anything else we'd ask him about. He's a lot of fun to talk to because he'll tell you all the little trade secrets that he did in certain scenes. And of course, Esham and I, you know, pop the notebook out. Oh, you did that. You know,
he's like, you know, I remember one anecdote he was telling us. He's like, in Braveheart, you know, I like double printed a couple of frames for emphasis on some of the gore moments. And so Ian and I promptly stole that and double printed some stuff in Fat Man, you know, like when the blades like running through and stuff like that. We're like giving a little more pop just from, you know, ideas we gleaned from working with him.
It worked great. It was fantastic. Wow.
Now, would you say that like there's times that he would look at you guys and be like, hey, I'm gonna actually do it this way and tell me what you think, and then run it like his own way? Or
look, you know, I think there's always a danger of that, but Mel was great.
Yeah, honestly, like, and that was one thing that was was really amazing and remarkable about Mel is that he's been on both sides of the camera, right? So he knows, yeah. I believe he knows that sort of confrontation or chaos or whatever isn't going to benefit the set in any way, shape, or form, right? Like he comes at it strictly as okay, and I think it really helped out. We were all synced up on the same movie, right? But he would, you know, we all went at it. This is a tremendously collaborative experience, and I can't say a single negative thing about our collaboration. It was absolutely wonderful.
Yeah, he did an amazing job. Like anytime he approaches you as a filmmaker, like obviously being a filmmaker, you know, he's like, oh. Maybe the only way we can translate is we were just like, well, he just knows how to approach us because, you know, he is one. So he would just walk up and he'd be like, hey, I'm thinking about this. I'm thinking about that. What do you think about this? And he turned it into a conversation so that, you know, you were all working on it, throwing in little tidbits. And then he'd be like, okay, well, I think I'll give that a try. And then, you know, it was his idea, but he'd walk away. Yeah, and go,
Like, and he would like do some improvisational flourishes, yeah. You know? Like, oh, hey, he'd like say a line. He'd be like, you think this is funny? You think that's funny? We're like, yeah, it's freaking great. Use that, you know? But he would always like check in and make sure we were digging on what was going on. I remember there's one moment where he was kind of like, well, I don't get what this moment is. Like, what is this moment? And we were talking to through him. He's like, I don't know. I just don't get it. He's like, let me see the shot. And we're like, okay. So we like, you know, we go over, he goes over to the camera and he has the stand. We have the stand in there and he goes, oh, okay, I got it. Shot makes it work. Shot makes it work. And then boom, away we went, you know? So. And there's nothing the dude doesn't see. Like he'll sit there and he goes, hey, what lens is on that camera back there? And we're like, oh, it's, you know, it's a long lens. And he goes, oh, hey, what is that? Like a 70, you know, 80, like, I think it's an 80. Johnny, what is that? It's 80. Yeah. You know, he wants to know every lens on every camera. And that, you know, that's just smart, right? Because he knows what he needs to do as the in front of the camera per, you know, the scale of the lens.
And he also knows when a set's running well and when it's not running well. Thank goodness we had a well-run set. But he knows it inside and out. So there's no sneaking anything by the guy.
Yeah, you guys said with how many different things he's done over the course of his career. It's nice that, you know, he pays that much attention to the detail and wants to make sure he's still producing or acting. At a continuous high level. Now, obviously, Fat Man was the most recent thing you guys done, but you guys have directed a lot of different things together, going way back from like 2004 with some stuff with like Squirrel Trap, and then more recently, like before Fat Man, like Small Town Crime, Waffle Street. How would you guys both see yourselves growing as producers and directors from back in like 2004 to today? Like, what were some of like those big lessons you guys learned?
Man, every one of them really brings lessons to them. I mean, we always, you know, say when someone starts asking us like what it's like, we always talk about how it's, you know, I think when you first start off and you think, oh, I'm going to go make movies, you have this sort of idea that it's going to be a lot of, you know, a lot of people behind the scenes putting out a lot of fires, which there are, and you're left to sort of just, you know, play with the actors and have a lot of fun and put your vision on screen. And that really only ends up being about half of the job. The other half is you're helping put out those fires. And it's not anybody. A lot of times it's not like, oh, you know, John's creating a lot of problems or whatever. That's not what it is. It's and you got to put them out. It's more like every production has its own series of weird little events that happen. Like, it's like you get a location and then, you know, that location falls through 24 hours before you're trying to go to it, or you go and get an actor and that actor gets sick and can't work that day, and you got to try to move that or recast it, you know, move the actor or remove the role that the actor's doing or recast it. Like all those little crazy things that are happening, or like you cast an actor in a role and there's some lines that just don't quite seem to be fitting in his or her mouth. So you're like, okay, well, what words can we give this person that would fit, you know, more like more easily coming out of their mouths? Or if it's a scene, if it's blocking, we're like, ah, shit, we blocked this poorly on the page, or we blocked this poorly on the page compared to the location we actually got. So now we have to reblock this. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's always these little stupid things where we can't get this exact whatever that we thought we were going to be able to get. We've got this though, you know, like I can't get a sleigh. I got a candy cane. Okay. Like, how do we get that out of a candy cane? Like those are the types of problems you're constantly just, and then there's the production problems as well. But that,
like there's one in Fat Man that's like the epitome of this. Right. And this is going to sort of like, you know, hopefully this doesn't ruin the movie for anybody. But the production designer, you know, shows us a picture of a sleigh and we're like, oh, it looks amazing. Right. Great. I love it.
Perfect.
And it shows up. And then he's like, hey, come look at the sleigh. Well, the sleigh's, you know, it's not this big, but it doesn't look like a full-size sleigh that could hold a man and a bag of presents. It looks like a sleigh that could hold two people sitting in the front and maybe their kids. You know what I'm saying? It's not a large sleigh.
Tiny.
Yeah, we're tiny. So we're like, holy smokes, what are we gonna do here? And so our solve in the moment was, hey, let's put the sleigh up and build a scaffolding behind it to make it look like it's continuing and throw a tarp over it. And so in the movie, you'll look at that, like that right when the tarp begins, the sleigh ends. There's no more sleigh after that, but it looks like the sleigh goes back another 5 feet, you know, and it's just like,
we packed a bunch of boxes behind it and we built it out under the tarp.
But the front of it, you know, the part that you get in the front looks amazing. So you're just like, it's just heading things, little things off like that across the past, the past. I think the other thing that, the other misperception is that more money is going to make it easier, and it just makes it different. It's not easier. Every movie, you know, is going to have its own set of, you know, ebbs and flows. You know, there's going to be great things about every picture, and there's going to be challenges. And Ian and I don't find the money to be any factor in that.
Yeah, it doesn't really. I mean, there's certain things that go up and you're like, okay, this is great. But then there's certain things that you know, end up being just a lateral move. You know, or some things that turn more money into a lateral move because now you're, you know, dealing with more unions or you know, now I have to hire five people to do that job instead of two people or whatever. Like, there's just crazy things that kind of happen as your budget goes up. And, you know, now the location that you could have gotten if you were just five people on a film crew in a student film that you could have gotten for $100 a day is now $10,000 for the day because you have Mel Gibson. You're like, you're not coming in here and using my facility for $100 today because
you've got a
massive crew and Mel Gibson. So they're like, okay, that's 10 grand. It's a Mel Gibson movie. So everything just kind of goes up, like way up. And if like our first film, that Skull Trap movie, you're talking about the budget was $1,500. The entire budget for the film was $1,500 because we did everything ourselves. Now this one was, you know, a budget much higher than that, but you know, we had a lot more people helping us. That have spent decades doing their jobs and becoming really good at it. So that's one really cool thing that happens is hopefully you should get to start working with people who've been in the business for a long time, you know, doing that job, perfecting that job, mastering that job, so that when you get to do it with them, it's way better than you could have done for $1,500 on your own. It's a master doing the job and that, you know, and it shows. And I think there's a lot of people we've worked through throughout the years that we've learned a ton from and just been like, oh my God, thank God that person, you know, or those people or that group has been on the set because they were so amazing. And I mean, even on this one, there's a lot of really cool stuff we got to do on this one that we didn't get to do on the other one.
Okay. Now me and Mark like to hit the hard hitting questions, as you can tell. And so we like to ask you guys, if you guys could go back and redo a movie, like any movie ever, together, what would that film be? Or what would you guys like to kind of be able to go back and work on?
So, anyone that we've done or like a, or any, like a, A franchise. Anything.
Okay. Just anything, you know. Because, you know, some people have that favorite movie and they're like, this is so good, but I would have done this or I would have done that. So.
What? Can it? I don't think that it would be redoing a movie. Maybe. You
like
know,
your own style. Yeah. Putting your own style onto it.
Thank you. One of the movies that we really have a really high regard for. Because, like, well, you know, for me, it's nearly a perfect film is Predator. So, Ian and I would love to contribute to the Predator canon in some way.
Like, we love it. We can't get enough of it. And I mean, you know, and I don't know. They've done sequels and Alien vs. Predators and whatnot. And you know, there's some fun ones, and there's some ones that you're like, okay, I could have done without this one. But then, I don't know. There's some ones that are great, and then there's some ideas that we have that we would love to do. So, you know, that's probably one of the franchises for sure. We would love to jump in and do something and take a swing at it, because we just have such reverence for it. It's so much fun.
Yeah, and I think obviously another one, but you know, George Miller's doing such an amazing job, is like the Road Warrior, Mad Max stuff.
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah.
But let the master keep at it while he's
let the maestro.
you keep going, and when you're done, well, maybe we can take a crack at it.
We'll tag in a little bit. Yeah, no, I mean, obviously Predator is always going to be a legendary movie. I mean, with Arnold on there, and you know, you have just a dude purely just hosing down a forested area with no regards on what's, you know, what's out there, just going to town. I mean, it's classic. You can't, I do hope that if you guys get the chance to do it, you will not change that scene, because that is, you know, one of the big homages.
We would never remake the first Predator.
I would never try to remake it.
I think it's
like
one of those.
It would be like, we'd try to think of a scenario and a spin. You know, we would do our own spin on it. It would.
What if, like, when Gus Van Sant did like a shot-for-shot remake with Vince of Psycho?
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
I don't know if that's going to contribute anything. You know, it's already been done. So
yeah, there's certain movies where a remake or even like a shot-for-shot remake is just, people are just never going to be behind something if the movie itself is too iconic. So a lot of people are just going to be too, like, you know, it's too much risk for a lot of people to want to see something else and to, you know, see different people, like someone other than Arnold shouting, get to the choppa, you know, like, I mean, who's going to really.
what intrigues us is when you take some, like a really outside pick and have them do like a movie like Predator. Like what happens if Paul Thomas Anderson does a Predator movie?
Like, yeah, that, right.
Like, is that just amazing. Predator like brooding? You know what I'm saying? Like, these are the things Ian and I want to see.
Like I, one of the ones I'm excited for, because we're a big fan of her work, but Chloe Zhao's Marvel movie, The Eternals, that she just did, like, I'm really excited to see what she's done with that. If she's been allowed to do her thing with it, you know what I mean? Like that,
right?
Kind, like if it's a, you know, if it's Taiki Waititi, what he did with fucking Thor, like, I'm excited to see somebody put their spin on it and not, you know, sort of get it out of the Marvel universe, even though it fits in there. But let a master have a crack at something, you know, put their voice on it.
It's interesting, right? Like, they get these really interesting directors, and you want to see those filmmakers reflected in the material, right? You don't want them to feel like every other part of it. And I think that's the struggle, right? Like, you want this cohesive universe, but then you also bring in these different cinematic voices. And I get it. I get the struggle there, but it's just interesting for me when you see someone with a really definitive taste and aesthetic take on something that has, you know, overall a different look and texture, and you're like, okay, wow, I really want to see their influence, her influence on it.
Yeah. So that, it gives me an interesting question to present to you guys. So technically, Santa is considered a omni-level mutant in the Marvel universe. Yes, he is. Technically, he is considered that. So if you guys were given the chance to bring Santa into the Marvel universe, how do you guys think you would tackle that project?
Whew. Like, I don't know, like a Logan-esque type movie, right?
Yeah, ooh, for sure. I mean, that's definitely, we have a buddy of ours who's a big Logan fan who loves that movie. And he always says, I feel like that's some movie you guys would have made if you had been given a Wolverine. You know, it would have been a movie in that vein, obviously. I think they did an amazing job with that movie. But yeah, that's probably definitely our vibe. I mean, on a comic book level, like another character that, probably one of the characters that we absolutely love that we've been in love with since, you know, the preteen years is Punisher. So like that is if it were a comic book that, and we got to choose who we would tackle Punisher. That was who we would go after.
You know, Punisher wasn't happy with what he got for Christmas. So
I
do have to say,
I put Punisher on the naughty list. That was a bad idea.
The Netflix version of the Punisher that they created will always be one of my all-time favorites.
Berthold's great.
Berthold's amazing.
No, Berthold's like acting in that, in the action and the scenes they did, will always be one of my top favorite scenes ever filmed. Especially when he did when they did the scene in season two, inside his little base. I found that to be phenomenal. Go ahead.
I'm surprised they haven't given him a film. I feel like they should give him a film.
Yeah, well, I think Disney bought the rights back, right? I think because they were trying to buy the rights back, because I know they got Daredevil back and Iron Fist and Luke Cage. Like, they bought them back from Netflix, and I'm pretty sure Punisher was included. So I think they have Punisher again. But yeah, like, how do you if they decide to do a movie, I don't think you could do anyone else but him. Like, I don't see how you could try to recast that without him being in the role.
It's just pretty great. He'd be definitely really exciting to see in the role.
Yeah, it'd be amazing.
We ask these questions, as you can see behind me. Me and Mark tend to be comic book nerds. We have tons of them and go through them all. So we always like to ask these kind of questions. Like you guys are saying, to perceive what the director wants to do, we're both really excited to see the Zack Snyder cut that drops next week.
Wasn't that insane how like part of it was like playing during Tom and Jerry?
Yeah.
Did you hear this?
That was insane. It was what was it? It was somebody in the that worked for them. I read some article that it was they switched the feeds, so when Tom and Jerry was being played, instead it would play the Zack Snyder cut. So like a decent amount of people got to see the Snyder cut ahead of time, because some disgruntled person with WB switched the feeds like randomly, like middle of the night. It's like this huge thing now. Like someone just decided that they wanted to just, I guess, cause some chaos or something.
What's the feedback so far?
That's the thing. It's under, like, I have not heard anything. Which usually is a good sign. Usually if in the nerdosphere, if something like that gets leaked and you hear a lot of stuff, generally it's because it was so bad that you're hearing a lot of flack of don't watch it, don't watch it. But it's been pretty hush, which usually is people trying to avoid spoilers. But I know the feed got cut really quick.
Like an hour in or something.
It was like an hour, hour and a half in or something. So no one got to see the whole movie or anything, just like maybe you'd think maybe an extra like half an hour of the scene or something like that. Gotcha. But
it's interesting. Yeah, like, that'd be cool. To think about, I did one review and the guy was like, it's the best movie ever. And, and I'm like, is this
like what?
Is this like, you know, somebody's friend that's like, oh, hey, here's what we're going to do. Take an hour of a movie that's really strong, and then you're just going to start saying what an amazing movie it is. That'd be a smart strategy, right? I'm always looking for the conspiracy in it all.
I mean, you guys can pay. You guys can both pay us, and we'll say that everything you guys ever produce is the greatest thing of all time within like minutes of it being released.
Excellent,
We're totally down.
Maybe you guys are team players.
Absolutely. Like, this podcast is brought to you by at the beginning of it, so there's no
every single thing. Yeah. Brought to you by the greatest movie of all time.
What? You guys haven't seen Lost on Purpose? Losing it out. Greatest film ever.
This is the best dairy epic of all time.
You might be able to get that in there. That's a headline for sure.
We'll make it work. We'll make it work.
Me and Mark do like to joke around with people all the time, because the way we like to talk to different guests and get to meet different people is we always tell them that we're a big deal. And so, like, we've talked to famous wrestlers, stuff like that, and we've talked to other wrestlers on their Twitch streams, things like that. We joke around and say, "I'm kind of a big deal. I'll get you signed on anybody. Don't worry." So
have all the connections.
Yeah, but you know, we're not Mel Gibson famous yet. We're getting there. You know,
the trajectory is getting there, gentlemen. I feel it. It's going to be like this.
One of the big things that we like to deal with on the Phantom Effect here is actually dive into our guests' fandoms and what kind of makes them tick and what they grew up. And you guys kind of touched on it a little bit with the talking about Marvel and the Punisher, but you know, what kind of things are you guys into when you guys aren't directing films, or even when you're like watching movies? Like, what kind of stuff are you guys like to watch more often?
I'll say one of the biggest things we grew up with, and we've mentioned it before in other places, but I think it's so important to us that it gives you a hint into one of the slices of the pie for sure. Is like, our mom got us she got herself, and we ended up watching a lot of them, but she got herself the Clint Eastwood collection when we were kids. And so we would get like a new VHS, you know, Eastwood classic every 2 weeks, and we would just watch the hell out of them. And I mean, all the Dirty Harrys, all the spaghetti Westerns. And then, you know, even his American Westerns later, like the Josie Wales and whatnot. But I mean, yeah, man, we chewed through a lot of Eastwood. So, you know, and we definitely have reverence for that man and his material. And I mean, you know, Esh and I were joking reminiscing when we were talking about what DVDs we first bought, you know, when DVDs were a thing, they were a new thing. And like, Esh's first DVD was Unbreakable and mine was Unforgiven. and we were like, dude, they're kind of like, if you smush those two films together, like you'll start to see a little bit of Fat Man in there, you know, which is interesting. You know, those were the first ones that we gravitated towards.
Okay.
Like that.
So, I mean, for sure. I mean, with Unbreakable, I haven't gotten a chance to see the latest one, Glass, in that series, but it was definitely something that changes the altering of the way you perceive stuff, especially coming from a comic book background. Sitting there thinking like, okay, we got X-Men mutants, that's about it, like, you know, superheroes and stuff like that. And then this guy comes out with Unbreakable and you're like, damn. Totally different ball game on that one.
And again, honestly, that movie's an amazing. That movie's a slow burn, but it's an amazing slow burn. For some reason, that movie,
it's like a family drama masquerading as a superhero movie. You know?
Yeah,
yeah,
for sure.
I could sit through 4 hours of that film.
We've gotten to an interesting point where some people are taking different risks when it comes to like superhero movies, where you're now able to get like different takes in different, like, as Devin's happy about this, I finally started watching The Boys on Amazon Prime, like after a very long time of not watching it. And it's like shows like that where you think of it, it's like, to me, it's like a weird mix of like, if everyone was like Booster Gold combined with like what corporate America would try to do with something like this. And you see with a lot of stuff, like DC takes a lot of different chances on like their animated films and taking different takes with people. Like Red Sun, for those of you listening, is a really good DC animated film that came out not too long ago, where instead of landing in Kansas, Superman lands in Moscow and grows up under the Russian regime in the height of the Cold War versus, you know, on a farm in Kansas where no one knows who he is. And so the world takes place of Superman just being like this Russian superhero. Which Amazing. Is definitely, it's just, you get, we're at an interesting point where you're getting different takes, which I do want to ask you guys. So when you're watching movies, like whether it, like when you go back and watch these Clint Eastwood movies, now that you guys have done a lot of directing, is it harder for you guys to kind of just sit and enjoy a movie, or do you find yourself like overanalyzing when you see a certain scene, you're like, oh, I know what they used to film that, or, oh man, I wonder if I used this kind of camera or this kind of cut with this scene. How do you guys like, is it harder for you guys to sit back and enjoy, or do you find it more educational that you're able to kind of come up with the ideas as you're maybe watching something?
Look, I think with something I've seen a bunch of times, maybe I'll start looking at, well, there's two instances where I start looking at the craft, right? One is if I'm not engaged in the story. So then I start like going, oh, well, how did they light that or whatever? And that's not good. You know, like, so that, and then the other one is if I've seen something a ton of times, then I'm like trying to reverse engineer it. Well, how do they do that? You know, so I think if it's an immersive story, I'm not thinking about the craft in it or the process, you know, and then I have to watch it again to sort of dissect some of the shots and like, oh yeah, that was a wonder, you know. But I think like, you know, I mean, for me, we're like everybody else, you know, we get swept up in it and we're living with the screen and then I'm in the moment. And, when I first started getting into it, I did have that problem when we started making stuff in the beginning, but it went away after a couple of years. And now I'm able to sort of just regain my sort of in the moment ability.
But it was something like I was just watching The Good, the Bad, the Ugly with my son, who's 7. And we were watching, we did like the first, 30 minutes of it, the intro, basically the character intros. I remember just watching it. It'd been a little while. It maybe been like 6 or 7 years since I've seen it. And just watching it with him, and he was mesmerized because now he started to do his own little movies, which is amazing. He's constantly running around with one of our iPhones and like shooting stuff. And then Esham taught him how to use this little editing program app. And now he's cutting stuff, which is crazy.
Oh, wow.
With no guidance. So it's like, he'll come up and ask me a question and then he'll start moving shit around and then he'll show me what he's done. And I'm like, man, there's some bold choices in there, man. Like, he doesn't quite understand. At times he doesn't quite understand how to tie things together. And then at times he does a really interesting, cool job at tying things together. Like how his mind is processing. And it's really amazing to watch. But when we were watching Good, the Bad, the Ugly, like I was in, after I got over the nostalgia of it for about 5 minutes, like my mind started wandering into how they were making it. So I think, like Ash said, that's a movie I've seen a ton. So if it's something I've seen a lot, yeah, man, I love watching it over and over and diving into the layers of how it was made, or how I think it could have been made or was made. Yeah. Those, it's fun to rewatch stuff that I love.
Yeah, for sure. You can kind of take different takes on it.
Yeah.
One of the things that I've been trying to get Mark to watch this movie, just because of the film styles and the way he does it, is Christopher Nolan's Tenet.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And I keep trying to get him to watch it because just the way he films it and kind of like throws you like in a complete 180 after halfway through the movie, I think it's just phenomenal. So with that, like in mind and stuff like that, do you think you guys would ever get into doing something that's like just completely out of your element? Or do you guys like to do something that's more like, okay, we understand how we're doing it in this route. Let's maybe take it this way for sure.
Absolutely. No, Ian, I don't want to just be, do one genre, one thing all the time, every time. That wouldn't be challenging. And for us, Ian and I love material that challenges us, that makes us find new gears. Speaking of Tenet, like that shot where he's going around the opera hall, right?
Yeah,
and
yeah.
He's following him and it's the contour of the buildings rounded. No one has a wonderful eye for like cinematic, motion. Right? Like, I don't know. There's just an energy to those cuts and they're really simply done. They're not complex moves. And yet there's an energy to those cuts and the shots. Yeah. I agree with you. It's great.
Yeah.
Yeah. We love to dabble in sci-fi. We love to dabble in, in horror as well. And like one of the things we're writing is a horror sci-fi lately. So like, I mean, yeah, but I think the one thing that will happen, as it's happened in all of our films prior, is that we kind of do our thing in that genre. You know what I mean? So I think it'll definitely still feel like, or you will be able to see the residual of us in it. But yeah, we definitely love, tinkering or playing in different genres. We usually mash up a lot of genres, which is really entertaining for us. But yeah, I mean, yeah, we'd love to.
Yeah. Something like, what is it? The one with Dennis Quaid, Prometheus. Is that the one where he's in the ship that like crash? It's like the ship that crash lands. And there's like those weird
enemy
bizarre...
mine, enemy mine,
enemy mine. It might be enemy mine.
Yeah. Is the aliens
from the '80s?
Yeah, yeah, that's what I was thinking of. Yeah, I was trying to think of like a horror sci-fi mix movie that's come out at some point recently.
What's the one with Jake Gyllenhaal? Life. There was one where that like the things. Like a little amoeba, like attacks them.
Yeah,
I think JJ's doing some stuff with the Clover, like that latest Cloverfield one. I don't know. I don't know how many people have a lot of reverence for that one, but yeah.
There's hit or miss ones.
The one that they did where he was down in the bomb shelter. you know, that was a Cloverfield.
Yeah, the one with John Goodman. Yeah, John Goodman. Yeah, that I did enjoy that one because it was definitely dang. Yeah,
that
it
was awesome.
Definitely a different take on something. You know, oddly enough, and I want to transition from this to your show on Hulu, but I feel like the movie you guys just did, Fat Man. I don't know if either of you have watched Black Mirror at all. The episodes, the stuff they've done on Black Mirror, but I feel like
a couple of them.
Devin, I know you have, and you might be able to concur with me on this, but I think the premise of Fat Man would be an amazing Black Mirror episode.
Oh, for sure.
Expand the universe. I think I've watched like a lot of some of the first season, the one with like Bryce Dallas Howard, where you live your whole life in social media and stuff like that.
Yeah. Yeah. Even the star situation, you know, it's weird because there's like, you watch these shows and all of a sudden you hear about something on the news and you're like, okay, this is actually happening. And you know, another one that to touch on in science horror too, as well as John Krasinski's A Quiet Place. She's coming out with the second one now.
Yeah.
That was another one that was like a horror sci-fi genre. Yeah. And I was just like, dude, that's like such a crazy take in that to have a animal or a creature or whatever that basically lives off of sound is insane with a deaf person inside there as well. So
They did a great job of that one.
Yeah,
it's definitely spawned a lot more now with, because I think Bird Box, or what was it? The one with Sandra Bullock?
Bird Box.
Yeah, I was like, I that one I haven't seen, so I can't speak to that.
All the people driving around with their blindfolds on.
I do.
It's in that genre now.
Yeah, it's definitely in that genre now. So I want to jump to something else that you guys are currently doing in producing, and it's a show on Hulu called Everyone Is Doing Great. So I want to ask you guys, it's a very interesting idea. So I know we talked about it off the air, so if you don't mind repeating it for people that are going to be listening, kind of what the show is about and how did you decide that was the route that you wanted to take this?
Well, it all started with James Lafferty, and we worked with him on about, I think, four different projects now by this point. And, you know, one of our beloved collaborators, like, we love that guy. We started working with him with Lost on Purpose. And even before that, we had read two or three of his scripts because we shared a manager, and we were like, oh man, he's a great writer. You know, and we just sat down with him just to swap, you know, notes on scripts that we'd read of each other's. And then when we were doing Lost on Purpose, we're like, oh man, he'd be great. You know, he'd be great as Rooker. And he ended up liking it. We got him in there and he did a phenomenal job. And we've been working with the guy ever since. But he came to us after Small Town Crime and said, hey, I've got this idea for a TV show. And I know you guys, you know, you've done the nitty gritty down and dirty route before, you know, very DIY. He was like, and I kind of want to do that with this. Would you guys be interested in helping me put it together? And we said, yeah, we'll help, you know, hit it. Let us know what it's about. Let's sit down and take a separate meeting here about it. And then, so we sat down with him a couple of weeks later. He walked us through it. He and his buddy, Stephen Coletti, were going to write the scripts and direct them and star in them. They pitched us the whole season. And then, yeah, man, we thought it was such a funny, cool idea. And especially with those two guys doing that, they are playing such polar opposites of each other, but best friends. And of course, you know, it's 'cause they end up being kind of an odd couple, you know, bickering through the whole thing in a great way. You know, but also with a lot of
who they are, right? They're like these ex, you know, celebrities that were on like a teen, you know, vampire hit. And they, you know, the cold hard realities of the world, once they're, you know, the show's been canceled and their celebrities sort of ebbed a little bit, and there's a bit of a stigma on these guys and they're trying to cope with it. They're trying to rebuild their lives and their careers.
And yeah. And it's dramatic and it's funny. And I mean, they're pulling from stuff that they've really gone through. So it's really funny. And it's really personal.
Yeah. I was going to say, with him being on One Tree Hill for so long, do you think that was maybe part of like the, you know, hey, I've lived through, you know, this kind of experience.
Absolutely.
There's definitely more than 100%. A sea of overlap between some of his experiences and the show, but you know,
there's a lot of exaggeration too. I mean, they have a lot of love and a lot of respect for the position they were in at a very young age. I mean, like, James got on that show at 17 you know, and then had to step back into the real world at 27. And that's kind of what he's commenting on. You know, he was out of the real world for a decade. And then he's like, and then I came back and was like, okay, I'm ready to, you know, I'm ready to do some other things now. I've been living in North Carolina, you know, on the set of One Tree Hill for a decade. I'm ready to come back and do some movies and do some writing and act in some different stuff. And then he just couldn't get traction as quickly as he wanted. And he was just like, oh my God, like it's going to take forever. I feel like I'm kind of starting over. And that was really the feeling that he had, is that he just, you know, that it was, it creatively, it was wonderful and an amazing experience. And, you know, he made a living off of it, but as far as him trying to, you know, push his career forward, it was going to be a boulder uphill for a minute. So he decided to make a show about it, which I thought was fantastic. And I mean, James is working all the time. He's doing really cool TV shows and bits and movies and stuff all the time. But as far as, you know, him turning into Christian Bale, it just didn't quite happen as quickly as he was hoping. So it's like, all right, you know, you got, I think everybody shoots for the fucking moon. You know what I mean? When you,
yeah.
You have to aim really high. And so I think, you know, that's kind of how you do it. You step out, you say, okay, we're going to have that house in the hills within a year or two of moving to LA. And then, you know, a year or two later, you're living in a $200 a month apartment on Hollywood Boulevard. And you're wondering where those 2 years went.
So what you're telling me is basically he's going to drop a bunch of weight.
That was our life. That was our life. Sorry. Sorry. What did you say, Devin?
I was just going to say, so basically
I blacked out and went real. I mean, got real world with it.
Basically, you gotta just tell them, like, hey, you either gotta become American Psycho and do the remake of that, or you gotta drop a crap ton of weight for a movie role and you'll be perfectly fine. Like,
or the third option, just start hooking on Hollywood Boulevard. And
It's like, never rule anything out, you know, keep the options open. Yeah, keep the options open.
Exactly.
I mean, that's how we provide this show. I mean, we just basically start hooking at our city towns. I mean, it's a little easier for me being in Detroit. You know, Mark is
there's
a little bit harder. So
there's more access in Detroit. I grew up in Detroit, so I used to train at a boxing gym in downtown Detroit, and we'd go running down like 8 Mile and stuff. Like, you know, we in between certain classes, you'd go for like a 2 mile run and back. And There's plenty of times where things were shouted at us.
Oh wow!
As you're just like jogging with a group of like 9 guys,
you got some motivation to go faster.
Yeah, yeah. You get some motivation real quick. You're like, all right, let's maybe double back.
Well, we do want to start to kind of wrap up here with you guys, but because we don't want to keep you guys too long, but we do want to say, you know, thank you guys again. We really do appreciate you coming on and talking to us, letting us into a little bit more about who you guys are, what it was like to film Fat Man, as well as some of the other things you guys have going on. But, you know, we'd like to turn it over to you guys and let you guys go ahead and pitch yourselves to our crowd and let you guys pitch a little bit about, you know, everything about the movie and stuff.
Yeah, and we own everything you say, but I mean, but other than that, go crazy.
Well, look, honestly, like, I don't know that we have much to pitch, but it's been wonderful just being on this show with you guys and spending time and just, you know, BSing about film and cinema and passion.
Yeah. I mean, you make these movies to connect with people, and I'm glad that it struck you guys and that you wanted to reach out and chat. That was, you know, when we were thinking of the idea, I mean, you're thinking of either how funny or how fun or how badass or how nuts or how bizarre, you know, or how funny or cool it's going to be. And you're just hoping to share that experience with people. And hopefully they, you know, get your weird twisted version or get your humor or, you know, or have a cool experience with it. So, yeah, I guess as far as pitching, I don't know. I mean, we're on our social media. So if you want to talk to us, we're on Twitter and we're on Facebook and it's us. So, come say hello and, check out Fat Man if you haven't. I think it's a good time.
It's definitely a good take. Devin, we'll pick our favorite out of the two brothers and we'll follow one of them.
Great idea.
And then like, you know,
I will warn you, if Esham ends up being your favorite and you follow him, he's less active than I am. Okay. So, I mean, I'm putting in the time, guys. So,
well, all right, so he thinks he has a little bit more to do that he can't move his shoulder. So, I mean, yeah.
He's only got one hand to type with. You're right. Okay.
Yeah.
So, he's only doing half as much.
Yeah. Like, I'm doing all the work right now on everything we're trying to type up.
Ian had to grow a third arm. Because
I did. I don't want to get into it. I don't want to pan down the camera right now. You don't want to see that.
Yeah, that's a different podcast. That's the Phantom Effect After Dark.
I'm pretty sure that's the Scene Snobs Network. They tend to do all that crazy stuff over there.
There's always interesting stuff.
But like I said, you know, thank you guys for coming on. For everybody out there, we do want to let you guys know that you can check out Fat Man on Apple iTunes, YouTube's got it. Basically, any major movie platform has Fat Man out and available now. Give it a watch. It is definitely 100% worth the watch. It's so great to see Mel Gibson in such a role, especially to have a little 12-year-old coming after him in such a way.
I mean, I can tell you with a 3-year-old hiding under my desk right now that would probably be the route he would go with if he ever got a lump of coal in his stocking. He'd be like, all right, I'm going to call. Well, in his mentality, he would be like, all right, I'm calling Green Arrow. And, we're taking this guy Santa out.
I don't know. I just saw him dance back into the room over there, and it looks like there's nothing but pure joy in that child's heart.
Yeah, he is.
About to say the same thing.
he's a benevolent being.
He was under the desk, and he tapped me on the shoulder, and he tapped me on the leg, and he went, Dad, I'm going to dance under the desk, okay? All right, you go for it, little guy. You go for it.
Well, thank you guys so much.
Yeah. So, Mark, you want to, you know, I'll always screw this part up. So,
yeah, you know, the things that, you know, Esham could probably do this with no hands. Devin can't do it with two hands in a working mouth, but don't worry. I'll save it as always. no, of course, if you've made it to the end of this episode, everybody, you always know that we try to direct you towards some sort of fandom experience and some sort of just different thing to watch and approach. And so obviously we're encouraging you to watch Fat Man, but in continuation of doing things like that, I would encourage everyone to find different movies like that, in different TV shows and in different comic books. And, you know, there's plenty out there in every genre that will take a different take on things that I don't think people dive into enough, because I feel that people just get comfortable in one set category and they just kind of stick with that. So I'm going to encourage everybody to take a different approach to watching the different things, find a different superhero to read up about, you know, like Harley Quinn, oddly enough, is a really interesting take on some of the funnier DC D-level villains like Kite Man and Condiment King, and just introducing different flavors to different things. And so that's what I would encourage people to do this week, is just to find those weird different things out there. And like, there's a movie called Tire. I don't know if either of you have seen that movie, but it is a trip, to say the very least. It's about a psychedelic rubber tire.
Isn't that a movie called Rubber?
Rubber. Yeah, it is a trip.
Yeah, I'm the one who can't say stuff right. Oh, okay.
but definitely, it's, you know, stuff like that. I'd encourage people to go out there. But if you did make it to the end, of course, make sure you leave us a review, subscribe, follow, you know, whatever it is on the platform you're watching. Go ahead and keep up with everything that we're doing here at the Phantom Effect Podcast. Facebook and Twitter, it's very simple, at Phantom Effect. We're fairly active and responsive to people that reach out. If you do want to support the show in any way, our Patreon is now up and running. It's patreon.com/Phantom Effect Podcast. We're always kind of adding different stuff to there that you guys can check out. And there's different things you can get, of course, from being there. If you want to follow some other stuff that we're doing, you can follow me and Devin both on Twitch. Myself at Bushido Geek, Devin at Dreamy Kong, do various, you know, games. We do live interviews occasionally as well. That will air on that. In addition to that, if you do want to follow some of the weird cosplay stuff I do, Bushido Geek Cosplay on Instagram. I'm not crazy active on there, but I do post stuff on there as well. And Devin, am I missing anything? Let's give you a test. Am I missing anything?
No, you went through the Patreon, you went through Twitter, you went through Facebook.
Can I suggest two obscure films?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Movies. All right, so two of my favorite B movies, which I have a lot of reverence for, are Robot Jocks.
Okay.
Laser Blast.
Okay, I had not heard of those before, and I'm a huge – I love, like, those B-level movies, so I'm going to write those down.
Can I throw out one?
Robot Jocks, and what was that second one?
Laser Blast.
Laser Blast.
Can I throw out a sci-fi that I watched recently?
Yeah.
I really dug. It's called The Vast of Night.
Okay.
It's a really cool kind of, I would say, Altman-esque take on a sci-fi film. If you could ever wrap your brain around that, it's now been done, called The Vast of Night.
All right. Well, we got them both. I got all three written down because I know Mark will forget. So
yeah, I got them down. I do love this kind of movie. I just watched one like a week ago about, it was with Gary Busey, about a killer gingerbread man. where he turns into the killer gingerbread man. But it was one of those movies where me and my buddy were watching it, and of course that's entertaining. But the thing we focused on was that there's a scene where she's making the mix that, of course, turns him into the killer gingerbread man, and she clearly like cuts herself. Like, she sees that she's bleeding, and she's bleeding into the dough, and she just keeps stirring it. And we're like, how is that? We're like, of all the things, we're like, how do you not like pay attention? Like, it's so funny. Like, it's one of those B-level movies, like, clearly done on purpose. But it's a great one. If you guys, I think it's just literally called Killer Gingerbread Man. It's an older movie, but Gary Busey plays it, so it shouldn't be too hard to find. But it's a phenomenal fun, like, for a B-level movie.
Awesome.
But with that, everybody, that will do us for this edition of the Phantom Effect podcast. Like we said, any links or movie or show or anything like that was mentioned, either that the Nelms brothers have worked on or that we mentioned just kind of offhandedly just now, we'll of course post the links to all of those things that we mentioned, and when new stuff comes out for both of you guys, we'll of course keep posting links to any future work that you guys do. So if you ever want us to, you know, come on again, if you're doing work, just go ahead and make sure that you let us know, and we'll go ahead and we'll bring you on again. We'll post links, you know, anything we can do to help out future projects, always we'd be beyond happy to do. And appreciate as that. Always, thank everybody. You. Oh yeah, of course. Anything you guys do in the future. And if you guys do separate stuff, then we'll pick, you know, we'll have you guys do like a Thunderdome thing, and we'll pick who gets to come on and who doesn't, you know. Yeah, you're a little bit of a disadvantage right now.
we'll give you a weapon, okay?
but that'll do us for this edition of Phantom Pod Podcast. Just make sure to pay attention every Friday morning, bright and early, for new episodes. We'll be back to doing our bonus level episodes very soon, every other Tuesday. And always remember that when you do find one fandom, three more will rise to join it, because we're all connected through different fandoms to each other. So we will see you guys on the very next edition of the Phantom Effect podcast.
Well, not bad for one playthrough. You have multiple achievements left to unlock. Please follow the Phantom Effect podcast on all available platforms and unlock the next level. If that doesn't work, just turn it on and off.